From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Happy New Year. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us from agmarket.net to take a look at the cash grain situation. And Mike Tenora will be here to tell us all about a pretty interesting development in South America. Brazil and Argentina are swapping places as it relates to dry conditions, and he'll try to sort that out as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, the first trading day of the 2020 calendar year, right here on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, in Chicago on this Thursday, March corn today up 3¾ cents. It settled at $3.91½. The May at $3.98, up 3¼. July corn three higher at $4.04. The December at $4.04½ for next year, up 2 cents. January beans penny to quarter higher at $9.44¼. The March at $9.56¼, up 3/4. May $9.69½, 3/4 higher, and July at $9.81, up 1¼. Next year's November $9.80¾, up 2 cents. Bean oil futures up 48 cents for the day. The bean meal 70 cents higher at $300.60 a ton. Wheat futures soft red. March contract a penny and a half higher. $5.60¼ the settlement price. July at $5.65 up 1½, and hard red July unchanged at $5.01¼. Live cattle futures for the February down 15 cents. Settled at $125.77½. The January feeders at $144.65. 67 and a half cents lower. Lean hogs in the Feb at $71.55, up 12½ cents for the dime. Crude oil is set $61.16 a barrel, up a dime. Ethanol futures a penny and 2 cents lower. The heating oil or diesel fuel about unchanged. Gasoline up 1½ cents on the RBOB at $1.70¼ for the day. And natural gas down 5½ cents. The Dow is up 227 points. The dollar up 0.467, and the gold futures around $6.20 higher. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Happy New Year to you, and welcome to 2020, Dan. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Todd, too.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened over the past week, because we haven't been live on the air since just before Christmas. And I'm wondering if anything took place of real importance. And I know there's one, at least one, the Phase 1 deal, which got talked about. And it looks like that's, what, January the 15th, if they can get it done. And there will be a signing ceremony.
Well, that's what it sounds like. At least that's been officially announced. And that is probably the key supporting influence as we went through the end of the year. And today's bump in corn suggests that I guess that deal is going to go through, and maybe China might be a corn buyer of some kind. Wheat and soybeans have had a pretty good run during the month of December. Corn futures spent most of December kind of going sideways in a sideways trading range. And now with today's rally, it's looking like it's wanting to break out of that sideways trading range. Now, one day doesn't, make a trend, or one day doesn't necessarily confirm that, especially since we're still in the holiday framework here. We got tomorrow to trade, and then we'll kind of get into a full week of trading, and volumes and that will start picking up. But technically, I can see why soybeans are consolidating a little bit. They did close higher today, but they were off their highs. But corn futures put in a good performance, and corn's kind of looking like it's wanting to break out of that sideways pattern. And if it does, a lot of technicians will begin to tout maybe a 20-cent rally potential in corn futures. And that would probably be some of the highest prices that we've seen in a long time if that would occur here during the month of January. Next week, probably at the end of next week, we'll begin to start talking about what the January crop report, the December 1st stocks report is going to tell us. I'm not sure they're going to tell us a whole lot, but it is a major report in the trade. Again, we'll position for it. The other thing, I guess, I always like this. I always like the idea that the market, the first trading day of the new year, if it closes higher, that is usually a better sign than not. It does look like maybe this January or the December rally, the reversal to the upside is maybe has got some legs underneath it, and we'll have to see, as time goes on, especially if the January crop report doesn't throw us any negative curveballs.
That report is due out next week on the 10th, which is Friday. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on what kind of curveballs might be in it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not going to be a clean report. And what I mean by a clean report is normally harvest is complete by December 1st. So they do a survey of the stocks of the elevators and farmers, and then they compare it to what their September 1 stocks number is, and then they kind of take a look at what their production number suggests and what the yield suggests and the acreage suggests, and so they can kind of work their way in and out of a production number, an acreage number. So you get a lot of changes sometimes in the January report. That's where you get a yield change. That's where you get a harvested acreage change. But this year is not really going to allow them at least a high comfort level that they have the December 1st stocks number on the money, because we've got a lot of there was a lot of harvest yet to be completed on December 1st. And then it's, poor quality corn that was yet to be harvested. So I don't know what to expect. As a rule, let's say USDA's reports take uncertainty out of the market, so they're usually negative. So I suppose if I was a betting man, it's doubtful that it would be positive. That would be a surprise, I think, if it would be a positive report. But I just don't see them having the good numbers are really give us a good solid number, and I think we may have to wait till the June report before we really know what size of crop we really have. I think we'll have to get this crop that's unharvested harvested and get it to work through the systems and go through a couple grain stocks reports and see what the disappearance is, and then we'll probably have a little better idea.
That probably sounds like a really long time to farmers, especially for them to wait to market a corn crop in the bin that may not be in some places the best condition. Do you have any best set of advices for them?
Well, my cyclical world, the last time I talked to you, I think I suggested that I had kind of like a 30-day window. Between mid-December, mid-January, had a midpoint around Christmas, and for a selling opportunity, because I do think we're vulnerable to a seasonal weakness in February, March. I think because of the quality issues, maybe some of the harvest unharvested grain might begin to get harvested at some point in time. So I'm a little worried to hang on to inventory if I need the money for it, let's say by March 1st. I would probably be in the indication to take advantage of any kind of rally I get here over the next couple of weeks. I'm not saying that's the high, but I would use price strength here in the first couple of weeks or so of January to kind of peel off some inventory if I was needing to get something done here before the roads are posted, or if I needed some cash flow needs by March 1. Whatever the case is, because I think there's a vulnerability of some weakness, as we get into that late Feb, early March time frame. And then of course, after that, then it's all about the new growing season. USDA then will come out with a new set of planning intentions numbers, and of course, it's all the big numbers are going to be worked in, but the big numbers are not going to look good. It's going to be hard to draw up a bullish supply demand table. If all of this land that was in prevent plant come out into production next year. So it's going to be real difficult. And then with all the weather adversities that we had this year, and we still ended up with decent yields, it's going to be hard to get the market excited about a short crop. Let's put it that way. So I guess I would be, you know, inclined that if corn here would happen to pop 20 cents based upon this chart formation, beans could extend itself, you know, another 10 or 15, depending upon the, you know, as we go into the signing ceremony on January 15th. Because once we get past that, I don't see anything bullish. And that's provided USDA doesn't throw us a bearish curveball on the 10th. So I guess I would be looking between now and next Friday, if I could get a good pop in this stuff, at least put some floors underneath your inventory. And then, you know, if you need the cash from it, start peeling out of it and start collecting some cash coupons. And then, you know, see how things play out. I know a lot of our listening audience is not necessarily within the radio area, but on the internet's all over the Midwest. And, you know, some places have got some real hot basis levels, others have some real dead balls. So, you know, you kind of got to use that also as a barometer of when to move your inventory too.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again this afternoon for Commodity Week. You, Sherman Newland, Joe Vaklovic, and Jerry Goodell will all join us, and we'll put that up on the web soon enough. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Very well. Bye.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website, willag.org. In fact, you will find our Commodity Week program there later this evening, probably after 5 o'clock. I think it says posted by 6, but it'll be up there at some point tonight, and you'll be able to listen to it in its entirety, or you can hear it tomorrow right here on our home radio station, WILL AM 580, and on many of these radio stations over the week. In Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. That willag.org website, by the way, is host to most of our ag programming for each and every business day of the year, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. And it also houses the files for the podcast, which you can find in iTunes, the Google Play Store, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and even in the NPR One app. Well, up next is a farmer, a producer, a landowner. You may have been wondering how the MFP program and the way it was put together will play out in Washington, D.C. over time. NPR's Dan Charles explored this for a national audience this week, and it's worth a listen.
This past summer, Robert Henry was showing me his farming disaster. The fields along the Mississippi River near New Madrid, Missouri, where he normally plants soybeans, were flooded.
It's just been so wet. They said it was the wettest year on history so far.
Just as bad, the soybeans he was able to grow weren't worth as much. China wasn't buying them in retaliation for the Trump administration's tariffs. There was some good news, though. Government-subsidized crop insurance would cover some of the losses from flooding. Also, the U.S. Department of Agriculture had sent him a check just to compensate him for the damage from the trade war.
We call it Trump money, is what we called it. And it helped a lot, yeah. And it's my understanding they're going to do it again.
Indeed. A few weeks later, the USDA announced another round of trade-related aid to farmers. $16 billion on top of the previous year's $12 billion. $28 billion in 2 years. Here's Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue.
President Trump has a great affection for America's farmers and ranchers, and he knows that they're fighting the fight and they're on the front lines.
The USDA's former chief economist, Joe Glauber, found the whole thing amazing.
I think I was surprised at that it didn't attract more attention.
Glauber, who's now at the International Food Policy Research Institute, says it deserves more attention for a bunch of reasons. This is more than the U.S. ended up paying to bail out the auto industry during the financial crisis of 2008. Yet the USDA just created this new program out of thin air. It decided that some old laws gave it the authority to spend the money.
What's unique about this is, again, didn't go through Congress.
Some people have raised questions about whether it's legal. Also, the payments are really generous. According to studies by several independent economists, the USDA is paying farmers roughly twice as much as the actual harm that they suffered from the trade war. And the payments are based on production. The bigger your farm, the bigger your payments. Thousands of farmers got checks for more than $100,000. Catherine Kling, an economist at Cornell University, says the government could at least have demanded some public benefits in exchange for all that money.
I think it's a real lost opportunity.
What farmers do with their land has a huge impact on water quality and wildlife and climate change, Kling says. And the USDA has some programs that pay farmers to help the environment.
Putting wetlands back where they have been drained.
But the budget for those environmental programs is just a quarter the size of this year's trade-related payments.
Wow, so many things that money could get spent on that could really be beneficial to taxpayers who are ultimately footing the bill.
On Capitol Hill, there's been an alliance for a long time between lawmakers who support farm subsidies and others who support food stamps, now called SNAP payments. Together, they support a big budget for the USDA, which runs both programs. This past year tested that alliance because the USDA was helping farmers while restricting SNAP payments. Here's Democratic Congresswoman Marcia Fudge from Cleveland.
They've already given out $19 billion plus dollars to farmers, but they're cutting $5 billion from people in need. I don't even know how to describe it except for to say that it is cruel, it is unfair, and it is clearly designed to support the president's base as he sees it, as opposed to those that he sees as being undeserving.
The USDA has not yet said whether farmers will get another round of trade-related payments next year. Dan Charles, NPR News.
On this Thursday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenora is here for this first trading day of the 2020 calendar year. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for being with us, and happy holidays. Happy New Year's to you.
Hey, same to you, and thanks so much.
Well, let's start in Argentina and Brazil. I think I just want to stay in South America, in fact, because there are, or were, one of the two, depending on where you are, dryness conditions we need to deal with. Can you give me an assessment of what's happening in Brazil as of late? I've seen just some things that look really horrible as it relates to potential drought there, but you really never know if that's just something that's small and in somebody's field where it's normally dry and kind of not great conditions anyway, or much wider spread. What do you know?
Well, it's been pretty widespread over the last couple of weeks. 91% of first crop corn production was drier than normal over the most recent two-week period, and also 87% of soybeans. So nearly all growers in Brazil were drier than normal over the last couple of weeks. Now, 2 weeks won't knock you out and cause major problems, but the reason we are concerned is because if we look at it over the last 30 days, it's clearly elevated. And if we look at it over the last 60 and 90 days, it's also very elevated. Now, we've been collecting our proprietary data for a couple of seasons now, and we can go back 2 years and clearly see that the coverage of dryness now is much, much higher on the soybean crop than it was 2 years ago. And it's also higher than it was 1 year ago when we look at it over the last 60 days. The thing you need to keep in mind is that last year, at right about this time of the year, we did lose yield potential in Brazil because of a dry patch that hit for a few weeks at pretty much the wrong time. Well, here we are again now, and the coverage of dryness is actually worse than it was back then. So that tells us that there is the potential here for yields to drop off. Now, WASDE is projecting 123 million metric tons of soybeans for the current growing season, and that uses a trend line yield that's very close again to that trend. Now, we look back in history here to kind of see how often do we end up below the trend, and what we notice is that a lot of years would have put production numbers into the 110s as opposed to that 123 number that we've been discussing. And that's a pretty big drop from where we're expecting things to be, because typically you start out at around that trend line and then you move up as you start to get a lot of rain. Now, it has been raining in Brazil, so you might sit there and say, well, I don't understand how this can be a problem because it is raining in Brazil. I've been hearing about that as well. The thing you need to keep in mind that 10 to 12 inches of rain is pretty typical for 1 month at this time of the year in the central and northern areas of Brazil, which is about 60% of their production. So even if you got 10 inches of rain, that's only normal. Think about that for a minute. We're talking about numbers here that are only adding up to 5 to 6 inches over the most recent 30-day period. And that's part of the reason we're starting to see some of these dryness problems. Now, as we move forward, there is rain in the forecast, so it's not going to be completely dry as we move through the next 2 weeks. But most of the rain is front-loaded over the next 5 to 6 days in the central and northern areas. And some of those areas really need rain, especially in Bahia and the northern half of Mato Grosso. These areas are just looking very dry. As we get into next week, though, we start to move back into the similar-looking pattern where it will be a little bit drier than normal. So basically, we think there is an argument to be made that the Brazil's soybean crop is at risk of downside losses if we don't see some pretty big rains pretty soon. There are some rains coming up. We're going to need to see these keep on flowing right through the end of January and into February if we're going to hold production at a steady level.
It's always important to remember the water-holding capacity of soils and what that does to the growing season. So we'll be watching that closely. Thanks so much for keeping us up to date there. In Argentina, they had been suffering dry conditions. Has that been alleviated?
Well, that was alleviated rather dramatically over the last 4 to 5 days. We saw 3 to 5 inches of rain in the driest areas of Argentina since Friday. And that's a lot of rain for them because their weather pattern, or at least their rainfall climate, is much more similar to what we have in the United States. At this time of the year, they would average about 3 inches of rain for a 2-week period. So it's a little bit wetter than what you see in the U.S. But again, they saw a lot more than that, and that really diminished the coverage of subsoil dryness on these crops. And so the early corn crop and the soybean crop are looking much, much better today than they did a week ago. And remember, that was a long-running concern as well. But at the moment, Argentina is looking pretty good, and there are some rains in the forecast. They don't need a ton of rain now since they saw so much over the last week, and we do think that 1 to 2 inches is coming up for most growing areas over the next 10 days or so, and so that should keep things in check. So for the moment, and more than likely lasting through the middle of the month, the Argentina dryness story is not going to be much of a story at all. If dryness is going to redevelop, it would have to happen later this month or in February, because things have stabilized.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd, and Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you as well. Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report on the very first trading day of the 2020 year. Thanks so much for being along with us. Don't forget, you can always find all of our agricultural programming online to listen to on demand anytime you'd like, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. It's at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll also find links to the podcast, but you can just search for Closing Market Report or Commodity Week in places like the iTunes, Apple Podcast Store, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, even the NPR One app and Spotify. It's a great way to listen to our programming and the content, and a good way to catch up on what's been happening in the marketplace. One of the things that we do is to put some of that programming up prior to it ever airing on our radio stations. Commodity Week's a good example. We'll record that this evening, along with Dan Zwicker, Jerry Goodell. We'll have a couple of other guests with us as well, and you can listen to it tonight, this afternoon, by about 5 o'clock if you'd like, or hear it right here on our home station tomorrow. Many of these radio stations over the weekend. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.